Hey, everybody, have you heard the news? I'm rapping Hitler, and I hate to rhyme.
What? That doesn't even make sense.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, I'm a little befuddled by Hum's rap.
Well, I never claimed to be a rapper.
No, you didn't.
I beg your rapping.
Chan server.
So, yesterday we had an embarrassment of riches.
Really? I didn't see anyone named Rich.
Well, yeah. It was an embarrassment of Molly and Veronica's. Today there will be no Patrick Beja. He is out with a little family stuff. So we wish him the best, and we will carry on, Roger and I, in his honor.
Carry on my way. When people say carry on, that's all I think about.
You only think of Styx. Is that Styx or was that Kansas?
No, Kansas.
That's Kansas. Sorry.
Kansas.
Those albums were right next to each other in the WGEL Rock Zone library, I think.
Like, I'm trying to think of all the state bands. There's Kansas.
Missouri. There's Kansas.
I mean, Boston's a city.
Well, yeah, a lot of city ones. I'm sure there's been bands named after all the states at some point. Whether they actually got any success or notoriety is a different matter. Missouri is a pretty... It had a hit. Oh, had a top 40
Texas.
Hit.
Texas. That's
There's a band blue. Named Texas?
Yeah, Scottish blues, rhythm and blues, okay. Pop band. Very popular in the late 90s, early 2000s. But Texas is
Alabama.
Like,
you know, thank you, Eisting.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
I was about to say the Oak Ridge Boys, and I realize that's not a state.
Not a state. Chicago, not a state. Dakota? No, there's no. Okay. Afternoon, Dark Redeemer. In L chat.
Plug about yourself with a paste bin. Yeah, you can plug my Twitter.
Well, you control that light up, Roger, so.
Oh, yeah, I could totally add it in.
You could just put it in there for Beatmaster to see.
I would.
Flo Rida. Good. That's an interesting suggestion, yeah. Eisting. I mean,
yes.
Sort of.
Yes, I mean, really, it's just an enunciation.
It's definitely a play on Florida, for sure. Like, I don't know if we count Flo Rida or not.
What about the Jersey Boys? Does that count?
No, I mean, if we want to be strict about it, the band would have to be called New Jersey.
Wait, isn't there a boy band called Maine?
Don't know.
Oh, they're called The Maine.
The Maine. Like the like the battleship.
Yeah, but like Maine.
Remember the Maine. I never knew about them, so.
Oh, they're an alternative band from Tempe, Arizona. I still call them a boy band because they look like one, even if they do play instruments. And they all have
they're men. They're a men band. Arkansas? Wasn't there? Oh, there's Black Oak, Arkansas. I guess that's what I'm thinking of. Not just
Tennessee. Well, there's bands with Tennessee in the name.
In the name, yeah, for sure, lots of those, but not just called Tennessee. Again, that made top 40 hits, right? Like Alabama was in the top 40. Missouri had one top 40 hit. Kansas had several.
Over here, another Jay Martin gave us a handy link: Verbicide Magazine, 40 bands named after cities, states, counties, regions, continents, planets, and galaxies. Interesting.
Thank you for Googling that for us, another Jay Martin.
Yes. Of course, there's bands named after cities. There's Boston, Chicago, Phoenix.
Oh, there was a band named Arizona? That sounds familiar. I don't remember a band named Alaska, though. Yeah.
I remember there was a song named Arizona, but I don't remember. Baton Rouge. And were they
Calexico, named after the border town. That's a good one. Nazareth, yeah.
Beirut. Nazareth.
Berlin.
Reykjavik. It's all good.
Arizona, featuring singer Zisha Messiah. Eurodance band charted in 1994 with Slide on the Rhythm. San Francisco-based Alaska had a five-year run from 2000 to 2005. And I lived in San Francisco then, and I don't remember them.
Ahmad Missouri. I think the first person, Ahmad, seems familiar. That name seems familiar.
America isn't named after a country.
No.
America is named after the designation of two continents.
Well, America was because the band members were all American, but they were living in Britain. Because I think their parents are all in the military or something. And so they...
That's a good link. Thank you, another J. Martin.
Texas. America. Japan. Mm-hmm. Brazil. Jamaica.
Jamaica, your
those are two
preparations for the show?
Spain.
Excuse me.
All right. How many bands are named after food?
Chocolate. Beef.
I wonder if there's a band called Flan.
I'm sure there's tons of bands. Yeah, there's tons of bands named after food.
The Flans is an all-female Mexican group.
Here's 60 Margarita bands named after food. Kind of sites that do stories like 60 bands named after food load really slowly.
Yeah, because you're fighting millions of other people who seek the same wisdom.
Exactly. It has nothing to do with the number of spyware invisible GIFs. Cranberries.
That's true. Cranberries.
Black Eyed Peas, Red Hot Chili Peppers. I don't know if you can. You can't Smashing Pumpkins. I mean, it has a food in the name, but Ice Cube. I thought about that. That's funny. Cake.
Iced tea.
Meatloaf. Bread, cream, peaches and herb, the raspberries, the gourds.
Salt and pepper.
I don't think Humble Pie is an act. I don't think that one should count.
Yeah, but Neutral Milk Hotel, is that really a
Tony thing? Basil definitely should not count.
I don't want Flash on this. I don't need it.
I know. Yeah. Sugar cubes, lemon heads. Hot tuna, vanilla fudge, tangerine dream, I don't think so. Orange juice, taco.
Man, it's making me hungry.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, Jimmy Eat World is a stretch, I agree. That's not a food, says Dark Redeemer. That's the act of eating and eating a non-food item to boot.
Yeah, in the world. Do. Those bands are all like late 90s. Third Eye Blind, Three Doors Down. I would say that was a low point for music, but that was a point where I just stopped listening to the radio. Hey, I wonder if that was the last generation of people who listened a majority of their music on the radio before they started shifting over to online forums.
Oh, so don't forget, no DTNS Monday.
Monday, yes.
January 16th, Martin Luther King Day.
I put that in there, MLK Day observed.
Observed. Correct.
So waiting to hear back for the other day. Oh, this is a scratchy shirt. That's what happens when you get where you wear freebies from work. From my previous work. It's not cotton. I guess this is cotton. Let's use scratchy cotton.
Oh, no, I don't yet. There you go. Now you got the control.
Oh, wait a minute. I pulled the wrong one.
I'm scheduling things. I apologize.
Oh, do I need to move?
No, it has nothing to do with DTNS.
Yeah.
Just people emailing me at the last second, changing things around. All right. I am focused on the show. Are you good?
I am focused on the show.
Well, let's start the broadcast then. Here we go.
Do we need to go live? Stream?
Oh, there we go. There we are. We're live on all the streams.
Live.
Apologies that you will not be getting the benefit of the wisdom of Patrick Beja today. He got called away unexpectedly. And so Roger's going to fill in for him. And we wish Patrick the best. He'll be back soon. I'll say that again momentarily when we actually start doing the show. Roger, are you just gonna hide behind the stories? It's fine.
No, I'll pop the. It's
you pop out at the top.
Depending how dexterous my hands are for swapping in and out of this. Part of it was I just started playing Halo 4 again, and my hands are a little cramped from 10 minutes on the Xbox One controller.
Uh-huh.
I'm such an old man.
10 minutes. 10 minutes got your hand.
It's like it's so bad. It's ridiculous. It's like, oh, my hands are cramped.
You know, I laugh, but I know exactly what you're talking about. Sometimes it's just like, what was I doing? Oh, it was at a baby shower. At a baby shower, they made me do. You know, they always do games. This was a co-ed baby shower, and so I got pulled into a team, and I had to squeeze a bottle full of apple juice through a baby nipple top, and it was a race. And man, it only took like 10 minutes, but afterwards my hand was just stuck in that position for an hour.
I remember, I don't know if this was an apocryphal story, because it was like, it wasn't carried on a wire service, it was just a website, but like some poor kid in Britain like got an early form of arthritis because he kept playing video games for so long. Like just constantly, and
I'm always a little skeptical of those things. Yeah. Like, plenty of kids play video games for probably as long as this kid, and didn't get arthritis. So was he unusually susceptible to it? Would it have happened anyway? Like,
well, I'll say this: I had a coworker who was already predisposed to having arthritis, just inflamed joints. Yeah. And the act of playing games actually made it worse.
Yeah, of course. Any activity that strains the joints will make your arthritis worse. All that baguette on baguette violence is getting out of hand. All right, let's go. We ready? You ready?
Yes.
I'm ready. Bus is leaving early. Here we go. Daily Tech News Show is powered by its audience. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. This is the Daily Tech News for Tuesday, January 10th, 2016. I'm Tom Merritt, and Patrick Beja was supposed to be here today. He got called away unexpectedly. We wish him well. He will be back. In the meantime, our producer, Roger Chang, will step in and pinch hit. Now batting, Roger Chang.
Hello. I am pinch hitting. I am the fallback. Remember the Fall Guy on TV?
Yeah, well, I'm the fall that was Lee Majors, right? The Fall Guy?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he even sang the tune that started the show, which is why it's so bad.
You are DTNS's $6 million, man. That's what you're trying to say.
You know, $6 million today is still worth a lot.
I know you wish you had a bionic hand after your 10 minutes of playing Halo.
Yeah. Like, you know what? This is the thing with age. It just tells you that you're getting older and you shouldn't do the youthful things like play video games.
It's hell. We are going to talk about the $2 billion lawsuit that ZeniMax has filed against Facebook. That's kicking off oral arguments today. So we'll be talking about that in a little bit. Apple is seeking customs exemptions for parts and products related to plans to build a data center server manufacturing facility in a factory it owns in Mesa, Arizona. Snap Inc. has announced it will locate its international headquarters in London. And now here are some more top stories. After Consumer Reports found battery life in the new MacBook Pros ranged between 3.7 hours all the way up to 19 and a half hours, Apple worked with Consumer Reports to find out why. And Consumer Reports, it turns out, has a policy to turn off browser cache for the browsing test on every laptop it tests. Apple says that's not expected behavior. It's a hidden setting. It causes the browser to work harder than it should. And in normal use, Safari caches things like images to the hard drive. So I guess that makes kind of a bit of sense. The other thing, the real thing they found was that practice of not caching images triggered a bug in the way Safari loaded icons that would waste some power cycles. Now, Apple says they have fixed that bug, and Consumer Reports says it will rerun its tests with the fix and update its recommendation accordingly should they get different results. Apple's trying to say that's why you got those wild results all over the place. But there are so many other people, including outlets that test and review laptops, saying the same thing. The Verge says the same thing. There's wildly different battery life with the new MacBook Pros, and it's hard to figure out why that happens.
Which, to me, this does illuminate or shine some light on what the potential issue is, that Apple was relying on a lot of software workarounds to maximize power usage on the platform, rather than the approach that most reviewers do is that the platform's independent of the software. Let's just run a bunch of stuff on it, see how long it lasts. Apple, and I'm not saying they're right, but perhaps they're seeing it as one and the same. They aren't two separate things that you can just pull apart. They need to work together. I do find it a little PR-ish. Like, it's definitely, whoa, you didn't test it the way we test it. So let's explain to you how you should test this to get the results we've been getting. It's a little bit like saying to a potential reviewer of a washing machine, it's like, whoa, you get your clothes a little dirty than the way we get it to test the washing machine. So let me show you how you should get your clothes dirty before you throw it in.
Well, yeah, the first half where they're talking about actually, turning off the caching, I don't get that Apple gets to criticize that for the points you made, but also that's consistent with every other laptop, and every other laptop doesn't have these wild fluctuations. And the other thing is, I have one of the new MacBook Pros, and I have seen wild fluctuations in battery life, and I have not turned off my image caching in Safari. In fact, I don't even use Safari. So,
there's your problem, Tom. Yeah. Apple's going to come knocking on your door using the wrong browser.
Yeah,
using the wrong browser.
Obviously, that's the answer. LG announced a 5.7-inch QHD Plus LCD screen. This is LG Display, the LG that makes screens for everybody, with an 18:9 aspect resolution. The ratio allows a traditional 16:9 video alongside or image alongside extra screen space for buttons, or maybe a virtual second screen, we don't know. LG Display also claims lower power consumption and better outdoor visibility. The screen will be used in the next LG flagship phone, expected to be the G6 at Mobile World Congress in February. They're talking about getting rid of the bezels. You know, every phone maker is talking about that. But having a little extra screen space so far has been used in things like the bended screen on Samsung, where they put notifications along the side on the Galaxy S7 Edge, things like that. What do you make of this?
I see it as a basic attempt to differentiate their smartphone from their peers, because currently there's so much on the market that you're splitting hairs either between features, between price points, between, you know, aesthetics. And so it's really, I think we're at, to me, it's a little bit of how saturated the market is with so many vendors, so many models, so many choices. I mean, for the consumer, this is great. For the manufacturers, like, oh, how do we make our product a little different? One thing I will say is that anyone who hates shoving a smartphone, even a 5-inch screen smartphone in their pocket now, is probably going to hate this, because there's no way this is going to fit in any normal pocket. And I perhaps see in the next decade the fashion of having phone pockets in the same way that we have watch pockets.
Now you're talking crazy. Like, people, you have been saying this for years, and it has not happened.
It's gonna happen. You know, time scales are geologic. Sometimes they move very slow. Sometimes they move very fast. Mm. Everything I just said makes no sense.
No, right. I know. LG Display, though, making an 18:9 aspect resolution. What's that?
Oh no, it's actually definitely cool. I'll be interested to see it. I probably won't be attracted to it just because of the size issue, but there might be people who have
I'm curious what they're going to make of it, actually, to be honest. I wonder what they can use that extra screen resolution for, their screen space, not resolution. Fitbit has acquired Romanian luxury smartwatch maker Vector. In a statement, Vector said it would begin, and I quote, building other new and amazing products, features, and experiences for Fitbit. Thankfully, they're building amazing products. I would hate if they weren't. Similar to Pebble, Fitbit, which, as you all know, Fitbit recently acquired, Vector makes e-ink smartwatches. They have the 30-day battery life and stuff like that. So there seems to be a theme in these acquisitions. Vector watches worked across iOS, Android, and Windows. And Fitbit's doing the same thing with Vector. Now, Vector doesn't have quite as vocal a community as Pebble, but they will no longer be making Vector watches. No watches put out under the Vector name. The products will continue to work, but they won't be developing the software for it anymore. So Fitbit is up to something. Like, this is a piece that fits with Pebble, because it's an e-ink watch. It's different than Pebble because it's a luxury-looking brand. It's a startup that they could get for a smaller amount of money than buying from a large established player. And I'm very curious what Fitbit thinks it can do with these watchmakers, given what it wants to do with wearables, which is figure out how to move out of the tracker business, which is starting to become stable. It's not a bad business to be in necessarily, but it's just not growing.
I totally see it as kind of a, maybe a slow realization that the usage scenarios that they had when people were coming up with the idea of a smartwatch aren't exactly what they thought it was. And they definitely, you know, the thing with e-ink is that, you know, what you mentioned before, they have a huge, tremendous battery advantage over using, the screens that they have now for smartwatches. So they might skimp out on more colorful, brighter displays, but for something that lasts 30 days that you don't need to charge would be enormously positive for the user, because now you're not like, oh, well, you know, I'd like to go for a run today, but I haven't charged my watch, and well, it's going to take a couple hours. It's like 30 days, I think, kind of cool.
Yeah, no, that was one of the big advantages of the Pebble, obviously, and the big advantages of getting a Fitbit-type tracker or one from Fitbit's competitors is that the battery life is very long, because they don't have to do a lot the way smartwatches have done. Definitely Fitbit is looking at this and saying, how do we make battery life a priority and get into the smartwatch game without throwing everything at the kitchen sink and having an incredibly expensive smartwatch? Because the other thing about Pebble is they weren't typically expensive. Now, the Vector watches, because they were, you know, affordable luxury, were a little more expensive, but they were affordable luxury. They were like, hey, these look like luxury watches, but they don't cost like luxury watches. So putting all that together, it would seem that we should expect a long battery life e-ink Fitbit watch that they promote as, this is the watch that works across platforms. You don't have to worry about charging and does all of the things we know you want. And it's that last bit that I don't have any insight with. And I wonder if Fitbit has any insight of what do people really want out of a smartwatch beyond just fitness tracking?
You know, and it's really interesting you say that, because in many ways they're approaching the smartwatch from a different angle than, say, like Apple, where it's app heavy. It's, you know, let's take everything we've learned with the iPhone and kind of condense or distill those features into a watch. Fitbit's coming like, listen, we don't need to make the thing perfect. We just need to make it good enough that covers 80% of what people want to do, because people potentially might forego the other 20% if the cost is low enough and the convenience factor is high.
All right. This next story is one that a lot of companies just could not resist turning into a clickbait headline yesterday. Yahoo filed a U.S. SEC document Monday. The document was fairly uninteresting. If you've been following the Verizon acquiring Yahoo story, you know, and in fact, even before Verizon agreed to acquire Yahoo, you know that Yahoo decided to sell off its production business, its content business, but separate itself into two companies when it did so. The remaining company would only exist to hold on to Alibaba shares and its ownership of Yahoo Japan. And there may be a few other details there, but that's the major reason that you would have a holding company left over after Verizon buys Yahoo. So for all intents and purposes, that remaining company is no longer Yahoo, because the Yahoo website, the brand, and Marissa Meyer were all going to Verizon if that acquisition were to close. So this document that was filed on Monday simply said, okay, we need to let the SEC know that after the Verizon acquisition of Yahoo closes, the remaining company will be called Altaba, and it will have a smaller board of directors. There'll be five people from Yahoo's board of directors will stay on with this smaller holding company called Altaba. It's a fairly boring story. It says, you know what? This is how we're going to organize the company that really only exists to hold the stock that isn't sold to Verizon. However, because of some of the wording of the document, you have to say that the existing Yahoo board members will resign, because technically that company is still Yahoo, even though they've sold the rights to the name and everything to Verizon. And you have to say that the name of Yahoo will change. And so a lot of people wrote up the headline, Marissa Meyer resigning from Yahoo, which will change its name to Altaba. Technically true, but entirely misleading, because no one ever expected Marissa Meyer to stay on the board of the holding company. She was going to Verizon. It makes perfect sense that she would not be a member of the smaller board of directors. And everyone expected the holding company to change its name and not call itself Yahoo, since part of the big deal that Verizon was paying for was to get the name Yahoo. So when you saw all of these stories about Marissa Meyer resigning from Yahoo's board, I have to say, Roger, I find all this horribly misleading. Did you get confused by any of it? You got muted somehow, so I can't hear what you might be trying to say to me.
Apologies.
There you go.
I was going to sneeze a minute ago, and I forgot. It's a bit of a non-story, but it also, I think.
You're having a little bit of internet difficulty, so your audio is coming in intermittently. You were going to say it was possibly is some significance to this.
Possibly no significance. Just really going through the motion.
Yeah, I mean, if there is significance to this, it would be
did that come through okay.
If there is significance to this, it would be that Yahoo feels confident enough that the acquisition is still going to happen, that they're continuing to file paperwork. However, in the paperwork, they have to list the risks that would cause the acquisition to fall apart. And one of the risks they listed in this filing, because it's up to date, is that there were two vulnerabilities announced, two hacks announced last year, and Verizon might seek to terminate the acquisition or renegotiate it. And we all knew that that's true.
I think just at this point, Yahoo is tech media's whipping boy for just flogging stuff. I understand the importance of a lot of it, but at the same time, it just doesn't feel, there's really nothing too revealing about the content. Let's just say I'm not I'm not impressed with the quality of coverage on this particular story.
And someone who's anonymous in our chat room is saying, where did it say Meyer will join Verizon? I didn't read anything about her in that. None of these stories today are talking about that. Previously, sources close to the acquisition said that Meyer would stay on with Verizon in some role, and they didn't know what role that would be. And the fact that Meyer wouldn't stick around to operate a holding company, since that's not her forte, shouldn't be surprising to anyone. Maybe she won't. Maybe she won't go to Verizon. Maybe she'll just resign altogether. But the key is, no one should expect Marissa Meyer to stay on with this company that's holding the stock, and she's not resigning today. This is all contingent on the closing of Verizon's acquisition of Yahoo.
I have never seen so much. What's the word for when you not micromanage something, but you look at something with a magnifying glass for a little too long? It just seems like there's a play-by-play coverage that doesn't actually need to be there.
Yeah.
For me, the whole story is that this is a story.
Yeah. There's a fascination with Marissa Meyer and Yahoo that's been going on since she took over that elevates stories to things like this. I may be missing something. If you're someone who follows this and say, well, you know what, there is an interesting part of this that maybe it's, you know, because she's not on the board, she loses a certain amount of stock and that's going to impact her bottom line. And so maybe she would have wanted to stay on this smaller board. I don't know. I don't know about anything like that. But nothing, when I read the filing before all these stories came out, because Hacker News had it, because Hacker News is awesome and always on top of these sorts of things. And nothing in it shocked me. I'm like, oh, okay, so they're filing the creation of the holding company. It didn't seem very crazy to me at all. Microsoft released a preview build of its Windows 10 Creator update to Windows Insiders on Monday. The Edge browser gets a visual tab preview bar, the ability to set aside open tabs in a sidebar. It will now block Flash by default. Cortana gets an update to let app-specific voice commands surface as suggestions in the search bar. Cortana can now also be used to set up a Windows install to increase accessibility access. The build also supports a lower blue light mode for nighttime. There's the ability to group some things in folders in the start menu. And finally, the big one, the blue screen of death on Insider Builds is now officially changed to the green screen of death. It's a huge day. This one goes in the chronology of tech history, don't you think?
I think it's fascinating because in many ways this reminds me of the way OS X used to crib all the apps and all the widgets that people would install to make the OS a little more usable and just kind of roll it in to the next version of the OS. No, I think it's great. I mean, it's if it's a more usable Windows creators update, that's awesome. I think, to be honest, a lot of these things should have just already been in there. And it might seem a little late to the party, but, you know, better late than never.
You could say that about Windows 10 since launch, right? Like Windows 10 has been catching up for things that a lot of people thought should have been in Windows 8.
Yes. And I'm one of those people that think that way.
Yeah. But I don't see anything in here that's bad. I mean, like you say, I wish they would have made Flash not default, like off by default a long time ago, but I'm glad they're doing it.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, I guess the other bit of it is this is, you know, Flash is slowly getting stomped out like a brush fire.
Yeah.
Right? It's just slowly different places are getting put out. Which
yeah.
Is kind of,
you just keep seeing an ember here and there, right?
It's like, oh, I better make sure. You know, there's so many legacy sites that use it, which annoys me to no end. But yeah, you know, eventually it will be purged from the nets.
And
the
green internets. Screen of death. Now you can chroma key in all kinds of visual effects on when your computer dies.
You know, back in the day, before there was a blue screen of death, there was just a black screen because your computer wouldn't boot or it would just crash and you wouldn't have nothing on the screen. I wonder why they chose green, though.
Soothing.
Green because... Well, that's the common phrase. Green is soothing. I don't think so. I've never seen something come up. I mean, just because
green is the color of jealousy, and when your computer crashes, you're jealous that other people's hasn't.
Well, that could be very well the case. Yeah, you know, why not yellow or
yellow
definitely don't want
death.
Red. Mm. Red would be interesting because that's very Star Trek. Red alert.
Yeah. Finally, the U.S. Department of Defense's Strategic Capabilities Office, along with the Naval Air Systems Command, announced on Monday that it had successfully demonstrated one of the world's largest micro-drone swarms over China Lake, California, back in October. Three FA-18 fighters dropped 103 Perdix micro-drones. The drones are told to conduct broad tasks like observe an airfield and then communicate with one another to execute the mission. So you don't give instructions to each drone in the swarm. You just tell the swarm, observe this tower, and there's a little bit of machine learning going on in there where the drones figure out how to accomplish that task together. And the key here is with little human input. So you can look at this and say a triumph in swarm technology and machine learning and UAV control, unmanned aerial vehicle control. Other people are looking at this and saying, yeah, they use surveillance as their example, but this could also be a bunch of explosive drones. And then they will be deciding where they would explode if you did that. Now, the key here is, of course, that that isn't what they did, but it could be used for that.
This is something that the military, especially the Air Force and Navy, have been wanting to do for the longest time. They want an automated system that they don't need to babysit like you do with current UAVs to accomplish a mission. Most importantly, though, is it's cheap. A per unit cost is so much cheaper. I mean, it's expensive if compared, you know.
But these Perdix drones, they're 3D printed. Like you just mass produce them for almost nothing.
Exactly. And there's a conscious effort. I'm not sure if it still will be that way in a few years. With the F-35 and other big ticket items that have sucked in enormous sums of money. You know, the pendulum has shifted, and it's like, how do we mass produce a lot of low-cost things that might get blown up, taken down, or whatever, but we'll have enough of them that we can get the job done, whether or not they're smart bombs, whether or not they're little reconnaissance drones, or even one of the things that I think, not Raytheon, was it Raytheon, that they put out was basically decoys, right? You put enough of these out, for example, a SAM site that has like maybe 20 or 30 missiles, you put enough fake targets in there, they'll be shooting them instead of the actual, you know, planes that are carrying whatever weapons and stuff to eliminate a target. So, I mean, it's kind of cool, kind of scary, though, at the same time, because eventually a lot of this military technology gets distilled into a civilian variant. I can't wait to be swarmed by ad bots telling me that the new Whopper, whatever, is available at my local Burger King.
Obviously, any technology can be used for good or ill. And so that's the way I approach this story, is if it's being used for ill, whether it's bombs going off in places that they shouldn't or ads swarming poor Roger as he's merely trying to walk down the street, then I will become concerned and we should push against that. But I think this is fantastic and a fantastic advance. And like quite often happens, advances in defense can be turned into uses in non-military situations. And there are a lot of good non-military uses for these.
Definitely. And I think one area you might see potentially is search and rescue, where you need to cover a large swath of ground. But even if you had one, you know, spotter plane or whatever, you could cover more ground if you had a group of these low-cost, inexpensive devices flooding an area.
Yeah, and just tell them what to kind of look for, almost like giving the dog a scent, right? We're looking for something like this. And look for signs of that and track it. Yeah, that's a fantastic example of the sort of thing you could use this for. So I'm curious to see where that goes next.
Awesome.
To get all the tech headlines each day in less than 10 minutes, subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. All right, so I'm going to go through the history of the ZeniMax Media versus Facebook situation. And then Roger and I are going to talk a little bit about our opinions on this. And sort of Roger, you brought up when we were prepping for the show, the great man theory of technology news and how that changes things. Because we've got a couple of big personalities going on here. You've got Mark Zuckerberg involved. You've got John Carmack, who invented Doom and id Software, involved. And of course, Palmer Luckey is no small personality either. So here's what's happening. ZeniMax Media claims that John Carmack, and ZeniMax bought id, so that's why Carmack was working for ZeniMax, and his colleagues at ZeniMax transformed the Rift prototype by adding hardware to it and creating special software for its operation, and that Oculus then took the work of Carmack and ZeniMax and did not pay them for it. And not only that, hired Carmack away, and he stole intellectual property from ZeniMax and gave it to Oculus. So that's the case. Trial is opening in district court in Dallas. They did jury selection yesterday. Opening statements are Tuesday, today, as we're recording this show. Here's the history. Carmack did begin corresponding with Palmer Luckey in April 2012. At the time, the Rift didn't have a head mount, didn't have specific software, didn't have integrated motion sensors. All of those things are important to note in the following arguments. Luckey agreed to let Carmack, and therefore ZeniMax, use the Rift to showcase Doom 3 at E3 in 2012. Now, he said, you can use the Rift, but remember, I don't have a head mount, specific software, or an integrated motion sensor. So Carmack used his own software for the testbed, used Doom 3 that he had modified to run, and glued a Hillcrest motion sensor to the prototype Rift that Luckey had sent him, and figured out how to head mount it using a head mounted display that he already had to mount it. Luckey did sign an NDA. This was prior to the formation of Oculus. And now in court, Luckey is claiming that that NDA is invalid and unenforceable because of a lack of a definition. So a little bit of a technicality here. However, ZeniMax claims that Luckey and CEO Brendan Uribe became increasingly evasive and uncooperative after Oculus was formed, after E3, when ZeniMax was asking for payment for some sort of royalties for the use of the things that John Carmack had contributed. Now, Carmack, who now works for Oculus, says he offered to manufacture and sell a consumer headset similar to Luckey's, but his idea fell flat with ZeniMax's CEO Robert Altman at the time. He didn't seem interested. ZeniMax also declined to invest in Oculus in an early financing round and was unwilling to accept anything short of a large non-dilutable stake in return for Carmack's participation. So Carmack says they could have been making these. They didn't want to. That's what Carmack says. And it's on record that they declined to invest. And Carmack says that's because they wanted too large of an investment. Oculus then hired Carmack in 2013, and ZeniMax claims he copied thousands of documents from his computer at ZeniMax. Oculus told the press that Carmack developed VR tech in his parents' garage, but ZeniMax says that story is false, that he developed it at ZeniMax. Facebook announced its intent to purchase Oculus in March 2014, and up till that point, ZeniMax had presented no interest in suing Oculus for intellectual property. After Facebook announced its intent to purchase, ZeniMax filed a lawsuit on May 21st, 2014, shortly after Facebook acquired Oculus, and ZeniMax sought $2 billion in damages, which is the same amount that Facebook paid for Oculus. All right, so Facebook said in a court filing in August 2015 that ZeniMax made no claim to own the technology and asserted no intellectual property rights before March 2014, and in a December filing, Carmack said his employment agreement with ZeniMax allowed him to be involved in Oculus because it wasn't a gaming company and it wasn't in competition with ZeniMax, and that's why he's saying, even when I said, hey, do you want to get in competition with Oculus, they said no. So it's going to pivot on that NDA, for one thing, and it's going to pivot on the fact that Carmack glued a motion sensor and therefore created hardware while an employee of ZeniMax and allowed Palmer Luckey to see the software that he had created, and whether a jury thinks that that then gave Palmer Luckey the boost to finish the software for the Oculus Rift. What do you make all this, Roger?
I just think it's one giant wheel of he said, she said. But also what's really interesting is the motive, right? Because like as you were mentioning earlier, like there was no inclination of interest in Oculus up until the time after Facebook acquired them. And so, you know, like, well, why didn't you say something sooner? And it's, I mean, this is as close as to gossipy news as you get, like in the Valley. Like, you know, like people, this is the reason why so many companies and startups, especially when they get funded, have all these lawyers suddenly descend on them with all these really weird legalese, because they want to avoid situations where, well, you know, we didn't have an exclusivity on Carmack's work outside of the company that he did for this other company. But now you're coming back and saying, well, he did something that we think is appropriating the stuff that we sort of may have done at the same time. So what it boils down to is how persuasive their attorneys are in court. Really, I think it's going to be going down to, like, which one of these jurors is going to best respond to this guy who's telling me that, you know, a hard luck story. Like, we really missed out because we were cheated and we were misled. As opposed to the other guy's like, listen, we gave these guys an opportunity to be part of the company, invest in it. Said no. It's like, well, fine. We move on to the next guy. It's what everyone does. And so, I mean, I'm having a hard time seeing where ZeniMax has a very strong case. I mean, they have a case, but I don't see anything more than maybe a couple of tepid anecdotes that flesh out their case.
Yeah, from the ZeniMax side, if you had a hard time following all of that when I was explaining it, from the ZeniMax side, what happened was Palmer Luckey wasn't doing very well. He hadn't finished his rift, and so he started talking to John Carmack, who then started giving him tips. And then at E3, Carmack built hardware, which Carmack says was essentially hot gluing a Hillcrest sensor to the side of the Rift prototype, and created software, which again, Carmack says is taking some testbed software that already existed because Oculus didn't have any software. And ZeniMax is saying that that design of hardware, that software, was then stolen by Carmack when he went to Oculus. And yeah, and that's the only reason that the Oculus Rift is successful, because he took that. Carmack and Oculus are saying that's ridiculous. I hot glued a sensor, an off-the-shelf sensor, to something, and I used some testbed software, which was, you know, not particularly revelatory and was built specifically for Doom 3. None of that would have changed the fact that Rift succeeded. What I think ZeniMax is really upset about, Roger, is John Carmack left ZeniMax. ZeniMax had dismissed it as, well, you're going to go waste your time on this VR that's not going to work. And it turned out it did work. And it turned out that not only did it work, but they got Facebook to pay $2 billion for it. So ZeniMax is upset.
You mean, are you saying they're sour graping the entire issue?
It feels a little bit like it might be sour grapes. Yeah.
It totally feels like that team that has that unbeknownst MVP player, like that's a second string or third string quarterback, that they're totally dismissing, and then he gets traded off because they don't think he's worthwhile to another team, and they win their Super Bowl, and they're like, wait a minute, we had that guy first, we totally developed his skills. Like, no, you did nothing with it.
Well, but so, if I were to argue ZeniMax's side of this, it would be that, hey, if you didn't get around to suing until later, it could be for a lot of reasons, and you don't lose your right to sue just because you did it after somebody got acquired, right? So that is neither here nor there. That's the kind of thing you use to try to sway a jury, but it actually doesn't change the law. If you're within the statute of limitations, you get to sue whenever you get a chance to sue, and there could be all kinds of reasons for that. So that part doesn't matter. What matters is, did Carmack do work for ZeniMax that he then took and gave to Oculus?
Well, and then the big question mark is, how do you prove that? How do you prove that he took anything, right? John Carmack could have said, you know what, I'm just contracting out with this guy. He's not a game company, right? And he's just developing hardware. I didn't see a conflict of interest. I worked for him. You were okay with it.
Yeah, and Oculus is saying what they did not contribute. Like, we knew that we could glue sensors to things. Like, we did know that. That was not something we only got from John Carmack. And ZeniMax has a point that, sure, but once John Carmack came over to your team, you really solved a lot of your problems, and he was our guy. And that's where it kind of starts to look more like what you were talking about, where, hey, we trained this guy, even though they didn't train their guy. They just bought id Software.
You know, I'm still having, I mean, it is a stretch. I can see the point. I would probably side with Oculus at this point, because there hasn't, unless they have definitive proof that, like, Carmack lifted software or hardware technology that ZeniMax had ownership of and brought it over to Oculus. I mean, everything else just sounds like hearsay. right? Oh yeah, well he worked for us and he's a smart guy, and then you suddenly have this smart guy and you've solved a lot of your problems. That's our smart guy. So you owe us money, smart guy.
Yeah. Well, and that's why you have trials, that's why you have lawyers, that's why you have judges and juries. So that someone impartial can look at this and say, well, hold on, let's look at the evidence. Is the code similar? Did he take things? Was he not allowed to take things? They're going to look at all of those arguments. Thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. Helps us figure out which stories you're interested in us talking about. Submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Got a couple of messages before we're out of here today. First one comes from Chris, who says, during episode 2941, you decried the lack of a security standard and said, like UL for electricity. Well, may I have the pleasure of introducing you to, wait for it, UL2900-1. That's right. The Underwriters Laboratory has collaborated with other industry security experts to develop the Cybersecurity Assurance Program. Like all standards, there are some critics, but no one can argue with the intent, which is to define a standard for connected devices, and few argue with the components, which are industry best practices like fuzzing, third-party vulnerability analysis, static analysis of code for security exploits, and more. So there you go. The fact that we don't know about it, and it was announced in April of 2016, means that it's not getting a whole lot of take-up from people these days, but that doesn't mean it's not a good standard. And thank you, Chris, for pointing it out to us. That's exactly the kind of thing we were talking about.
That's good news. I mean, I think really having a broadly recognized standard, especially for things like security, is crucial. It's crucial for moving ahead, especially in a world where so many of our consumer electronics products are now connected devices. And people are like, well, what am I buying? I know if as a UL, someone tested it, and yeah, it's not going to fry my house.
And that goes to Darren's point, is just having a logo on a box doesn't make you secure, and you shouldn't rely on that. Yeah. But I go back to my argument from that episode, which was, sure, but having people working on standards is at least getting us a little farther down the road from having no standards and hard coding in passwords.
Yeah. And I agree with Darren to an extent, but at the same time, why shouldn't people have a certain level of confidence when they see a label?
Well,
on a
it's all like about it's, whether you can have that confidence in the label, you know. That's a fair point.
So
David in Brisbane, Australia said, as a data analyst who used to work in traffic and transport forecasting, I am really excited about Uber opening up their traffic data. It gives us great insights into where people are coming from and going to, as well as travel times and congested speeds on roads. I know we in Australia have been trying to request this type of data from taxi companies who have held it close to their chest, perhaps due to concern over scrutiny of taxi driver work hours, speeding, etc. This data alone is a very small part of traffic forecasting. Lots already goes into these models, but more data is always better than less. I hope that it shakes the taxi industry into providing this type of data too.
Maybe, possibly, but I don't think it would. I mean, I think a lot of that taxi data is also about how they can get their cars around major traffic congested spots without tipping off their competitors. Like, hey, Mike, we'll get you over there. Whatever.
Well, and that's why people were a little surprised that Uber was sharing this, because Uber would like to have an advantage in that as well. But I think what they're saying is our advantage is in the algorithm that routes our drivers, not in the data that we use to make our decisions. Yeah. All right, that's it for this episode of Daily Tech News Show. Thank you, Roger, for filling in. Patrick Beja will be back next week. Roger, you have anything to tell folks about before we're out of here?
You know what? If you want, follow me on Twitter at Jolly Roger, JOLLY Roger.
Yeah, you got the Jolly Roger early on. You hopped on that.
Yes, there's a lot of people use it. They think it's something else, but hey, who am I to dissuade anyone?
Thanks to everybody who supports the show. DailyTechNewsShow.com/support is the place to go. If you've got a dollar to share with us a month, like a lot of people, or more, you can do that. That's the biggest way that we make the show happen. But there's all kinds of other ways. If you're like, man, I ain't got a dollar. We understand. It's the way the economy goes sometimes. So you can just tell folks about it, or maybe buy something in a shop that you can justify the purchase for, or just give once. If you're like, I got a dollar 1 month, but maybe not every month. Check it out. DailyTechNewsShow.com/support. Big thanks to all our patrons at patreon.com/DTNS, including Jeffrey Moxley, Will Curtis, and Chris Ike. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. And our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. Back tomorrow with Scott Johnson. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Okay.
Woohoo.
Good show. Thank you, Roger.
Good shoe. Good shoe.
Really good shoe. Even if Hangouts decided that it just didn't want to automatically switch inputs anymore.
Oh, did it stopped again?
Yeah. Mm. I was just doing it manually. So it's going to be stuck on me for the post show because I'm distracted by editing. Oh, hey, by the way, folkses, there, if you're in the LA area and you're free at 7 o'clock tomorrow, why not head down to Santa Monica where I and Ryan Williams will be hosting an event at... I'm trying to get all the details here. General Assembly in downtown Santa Monica. It's right down by 3rd Street Promenade. And that is... Where is it? Oh, I'm trying to find it. Well, the details are in Patreon. I sent them out in the monthly update to Patreon. Let me see if I can find them here. But anyway, yeah, we're going to be talking about... podcasting and the business of podcasting and crowdfunding. Let's see. I think I found it here. Oh, no, I didn't. Ryan's going to be doing his podcast live there. Yeah, here we go. Wednesday, January 11th. Doing a horrible job of finding this information, aren't I? During the workshop, Ryan will select entrepreneurs from the crowd to present their idea in business and then give them sort of a feedback on the pitches. So anyway, it's good place. General Assembly is a cool place, and Ryan's a great guy, and it's going to be fun. So if you're around Santa Monica tomorrow at 7 p.m., RSVP link is in the chat room or in the Patreon, or just look up General Assembly. You can find it there. What do we got for titles there, Roger?
All right. Top of the heap, You're Browsing It Wrong, followed by The Green-Screened Monster, followed by It's Not Easy Being a Green Screen of Death,
sure,
Drones Receive a Swarm Welcome, that's not what he did there, A Matter of Battery Life and Death, Roger Makes No Sense, RIP BSOD, Long Live GSOD, might be a little... obscure. BSD is looking a little green. The Lone Man. Or clickbait. No more vectors.
By the way, breaking news, and thank you for putting this in the chat room taxi cab. Chris Lattner, who is the open source advocate for Swift at Apple, is leaving Apple and joining Tesla as vice president of autopilot software.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm.
Intriguing. Inquiry.
Consumer Reports was holding the new MacBook Pro wrong? Consumer. Oh, consumer.
Yeah,
sorry.
It's just a typo.
Sorry. The B threw me off. I was like, what? I thought that was a person's name. Upgrade internet, sell Yahoo. So You're Browsing It Wrong. Seems a top. Tripping the
Oculus Rift. That's a good one for those.
I like that one. Oh, yeah. Crap. I was going to vote for it, then it shifted. Voted.
Oh, Levelator's done. Tripping the Oculus Rift. I like that. Might go with that. You know, the guy leaving Swift to go to Tesla is very gossipy too. But if you take the personalities out of it, kind of makes sense. Guy worked at Apple for a long time, set up a project that's going strong, doing well. wants a new challenge. What's more challenging than Tesla Autopilot?
Well, you know, what's fascinating is how much of the tech industry actually is driven by personality. I mean, the most obvious ones are like Musk and Jobs.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
Zuckerberg, but like just having that, not just having a vision, but being able to kind of, I don't want to say force it on others, but to kind of turn people to that viewpoint. I mean, it takes a lot of salesmanship, right? You can't sweet talk someone by berating them or yelling at them. There has to be a weird combination.
I don't know. It worked for Steve Jobs, but most people can't get away with it.
Yeah.
I guess the interesting thing you might want to say is Apple really is taking a lot of guff for not having a good AI/machine learning product. Siri is sort of lagging there, and they don't seem to have to be contributing to any serious research, etc. And then one of their big software developers goes to work on Autopilot.
Maybe things at Apple are a little too safe.
That's understating it.
A little too safe.
I mean, a lot of people have been making exactly that criticism for more than a year now.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things. Was the was it Andy Grove who wrote the book? Only the paranoid survive. Like, there's a constant churn, and you see it even more so in technology because of the fast pace at which developments happen. But there's, you know, remember when Netscape was around and people were talking about people who sold their Netscape stocks and could retire early, and then suddenly, like, you know, things change overnight.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I shouldn't say it's ridiculous. It's just it's fascinating to see it happen because within our lifetimes, we've seen two or maybe three generations, you know, of how people interfaced with the internet.
Yeah.
Right. Before it was just like, well, I can send you email, which is this awesome thing where I get to type stuff on a green terminal and they can send it to you. And
right?
It was good.
It was Gopher and Pine and Tin. And
yeah. I was remarking to Jen the other day, my wife, because we have a little 32-inch HDTV on the end of the table to keep my kid busy while he's eating because my wife has misophonia. And I was just like, can you imagine when you were like, you know, grade school in the 80s and someone told you, you'll have a really big TV that's small and light enough to sit at the end of your table and you could watch it. And not only could you watch it, you could, you know, on-demand content. You don't have to wait for like 8 o'clock for like the A-team to show up. Just go to this service and they'll just send it to you. Like no videotape even. You just straight to it. Be awesome.
I mean, crazy. We kind of have all of those things. We just don't use it in the way that was being described.
It's when I was in high school in the 90s, I don't want to give away my age, early 90s.
Seriously.
There was a new high school being built in my town, and it was all the rage because this would be at the forefront of technology. It was going to have an Olympic size pool. It's going to have all these sporting, you know, venues, and it's going to have this really cool system where every classroom would have its own TV.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just for people who are maybe younger than me, back in my day, they would have to wheel a TV on a cart down the hall with an attached VCR.
With a big old top-loading VCR underneath.
Oh, yeah. And every classroom would have a TV, and they would have a phone, and they could call down to the office and tell the guy, I want this videotape to be played for this room.
Uh-huh.
And they could send that signal right to that
room.
Oh,
my gosh, that's so clunky.
But, like, my English teacher, Mr. Vache, was, like, gushing. He was like, oh, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be so amazing. Like, I'm thinking about this, and I was like, really? That was your solution?
How is that easier than just having the tape and the video and the VCR on the cart? Like,
because it's all centralized, Tom.
It's all centralized. Meaning single point of failure. That's funny.
Wait, Roger does not equal 60. I wish, because then I'd be 5 years away.
You know, I graduated from high school in 1988. So if you went to high school in the 90s, you already sounded young to me.
I am younger than you.
So don't worry. That's what I'm laughing at you for worrying about feeling old.
No, because Beef wrote Roger equals 60 in the chat.
No, before he wrote that, though, you're like, oh, I'm not going to tell you when I went to high school.
It's because I'm younger than you. You feel offended because I would I'm afraid to mention.
Because if you're old, that makes me even older.
Yes, because someone did that when they're someone in the 30s did that one around me. It's like, you have no freaking idea.
I spent most of my younger life waiting to become old, though. I'm going to enjoy it.
No, I spent most of my life figuring out how I could avoid all the troubles and being smarter than everyone else I saw. And that didn't really pan out.
Never does. There's always a faster fish.
What I was always fascinated with were the people who continued to work well into their like late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
We had a there was a guy who used to fix all my dad's furniture at the restaurant. His name was Leo. And remember, he built my dad a dance floor, but he was like 81, 82, but he did everything himself. It's amazing. It's like, man, I want to be like that.
I want to be, and this kind of job that I do right now gives me hope for this, but I want to be somebody who continues to work all my life, but enjoys it.
Yeah.
You know, like the idea of retirement was always like, you have to do this thing you don't like, but finally at a certain age, when you get too old, you get the reward of being able to take it easy because you're old and tired. And to me, a better system might be, you know, we try to make sure that people are doing things they enjoy in order to have a job. And you can laugh at me because it's, you know, it's hard for that to happen, but it's not impossible. And that might be the goal.
And you're, might be.
I mean, not this is venturing into East meets West territory. Maybe I should save it for a recording, but you know, you say like, well, nobody's going to want to take out the trash. Maybe they will. Right? Maybe there's somebody who really digs. I mean, you've met the internet. there's a fetish for everything. Maybe there's somebody who's like, love trash. I love taking out trash. Right? And even with that, there's always the possibility that we can automate and mechanize a lot of the things that nobody wants to do. So I don't know.
I've always found that people who do physical jobs, whether it's being like a cook or working in a machine shop, what really gave them the most enjoyment of their job was being able to kind of guide that feature. They weren't just a cog.
Yeah, right.
They weren't just like, you know, Smith, you make 20 more of these widgets, you know, before lunchtime.
Totally.
And we're good. And then you can move on to these other widgets. It's like, well, no, let's, you know, if you get something not just challenging, but really interesting to do.
Yeah, it's having some agency over what you're doing. Like feeling like you really are in charge of what you're doing, even if you're not in charge of everything.
Yeah.
Makes a big difference.
Maybe I'll retire as a babysitter.
You like sitting with babies?
No, not really.
Well, there you then.
I love being around kids, but there's times where I just need to call a timeout and grab a frozen burrito and nuke it.
I believe that's true of everyone. Well, maybe not the burrito part, but the needed
Daily Tech News Show.
But you, well, you know, like everyone has their frozen burrito moment.
Meyer and Yahoo.
It could be a Twix. And I'm one of those people. Kit Kat. I think that pint of ice cream. Boy. Yeah. grandparenting is great. You deal with the kids when they're happy and you leave them when they're sad with the parents.
That's called being a grandparent. Isn't that what?
Yeah, that's jamming 3-11s things. Like grandparents. Like, yeah.
Dude.
And then you can offer all the advice without having to deal with the repercussions.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for watching. It was a good show. Good job, Roger. Again, good wishes to Patrick. He'll be back, and we will talk to you all soon.